The Education Gadfly Show starts now. Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my trusty co-host, who has never once leaked anything to Robert Novak, Rick Hess.
Hey, Mike, it's good to be here. But I got to tell you, that Novak, persistent fella.
He sure.
He cracked Armitage.
You better believe it. Rick, it is good to have you back in the studio.
Why, thank you, babe.
You're looking good. You got a nice tan.
Thank you.
From your many, 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 many days in the sun in Hawaii.
I like Hawaii. It's a good state.
Yeah, looks like it's very good for you. Now, as you know, when you were gone, we did have a guest co-host, Sarah Mead. And I have to say, she was very good co-host. I mean, you know, she answered the questions with substance and stayed on topic. And, you know, she had some jokes and she, you know, we had some fun, but it was all politically correct and appropriate. But I have to say, there was still something missing, Rick.
She's got game, though. You got to. She's got game.
She's got game. But we did miss the gleam of your silver chain.
Oh.
Now, did you have a chance to tune in from Hawaii and listen to the show?
I did not.
No.
But my briefers have informed me that Sarah was stellar.
She was. But she did have some comments that I thought were very interesting, Rick. You know, I did have to ask her, of course, in light of your comments about her, whether or not she found you to be tasty. And have your briefers told you what she said to that?
No, they mentioned that she liked tasty cakes.
Yes. Well, actually, Rick, she said that no, Rick Hess was not tasty in the interview.
That's a crusher.
So I know we need to move past this now on the show, but just one last time, do you have any comments to Sarah about that, Rick?
No, man, it's beauty about America. Everybody gets to, you know, pursue their own little angels.
I guess that's true. You know, so some people like Dunkin' Donuts. Other people like
Krispy Kreme.
Thank you very much. Krispy Kreme. There you go. Okay. Well, listeners, if you have thoughts about whether or not Rick is tasty, shoot us a line at letters@edexcellence.net. We would love to hear from you. You can just put in the header, you know, tasty yes or tasty no, and we'll tally the votes.
That'd be good. That's certainly one way to use the Fordham internet
access.
Okay,
very good, good, good. Well, we have a big show today. We've got another game of Pardon the Gadfly, of course. An interview with a woman named Virginia, who has some very interesting thoughts about our recently released reports that we just put out to Dream the Impossible Dream, Four Approaches to National Standards and Tests for America's Schools. It's quite a title.
That's a heck of a title. Plus, did you guys think of that yourselves?
We did, we did. And Edgewonk did call it cheesy, and I have to say, we do cheesy here at the Fordham Foundation.
Oh.
That's what we're all about. And then also our report, the State of State Standards 2006. So we'll talk about that some. And of course, our weird correspondent, Liam, will serve up a dose of education news of the weird. So are you ready to play Pardon the Gadfly?
Let's do it.
Okay. Topic number one. This year's SAT scores came out the other day, and the news is not good. Average scores in reading and math showed the largest decline in 31 years. Rick, what the heck is going on?
Shows once again our ability to make big media hullabaloos out of non-events. Everybody got bored with that guy who supposedly killed a 6-year-old in Colorado, didn't do it. We need a new silly distraction. That doesn't mean anything. It's a new SAT. They introduced the writing component partly because they changed it. A lot of folks who were seniors in high school took it earlier in the year on the old test in order to get under the old cycle. 3% fewer people are doing retakes for the reasons that aren't entirely clear. It's a 4-hour-long test. It's simply non-comparable. It doesn't mean a thing.
Rick, you have bought the College Board's line, hook, line, and sinker, and plus the Education Establishment's line. I mean, look at you. You're just apologizing away.
Hold on. Whose line am I buying?
The College Board, the Education Establishment.
But they have the same line?
They have the same line. The line is, oh, this means nothing. It's just a different test.
Well, that's a bad line for the College Board. They sell this darn thing.
I know. I mean, they say their line is that, look, that, you know, for some reason fewer kids retook the test and, you know, yada, yada, yada. They do argue that the scores are, you know, that you can link the results for this one from last year. But the point is, everybody's saying, you know, at least in the education blob, that no, we should just ignore this. It doesn't mean anything. But Rick, you know, look at the latest NAEP results at the 12th grade level, and you also see a senior slump. So doesn't this provide corroborating evidence that, in fact, there is something wrong going on in our high schools?
Well, there's been something wrong going on in our high schools for years.
All right, but it might be getting even worse. So We're just going to ignore this. We're just going to wish it away. Rick Hess, Mr. Pollyanna. Goodness gracious.
I like it.
What's our second
topic? All right. Topic two. Thomas D. of Stanford University recently published a new study in the upcoming issue of Education Next that shows students learn better from teachers of their own sex. Not only that, but students seem to have worse attitudes when in class with teachers of the opposite sex. Mike, does this mean what I think it does?
Rick, I don't even want to know what you're thinking in light of this study. What this study does seem to mean is that, look, the fact that we have so few male teachers is probably not very good for our boys. I don't know what Sarah Mead would say about that. You know, but if it is true, if more research shows that this is in fact the case, that boys learn better from men, girls learn better from women, on average, of course, there are exceptions, then we got to figure out a way to get more men into our schools.
Does this mean affirmative action for male teachers, Mike?
Well, maybe that's exactly what we need, Rick. What kind of affirmative action would it take for you to go back into the classroom?
I don't know. If there are fewer female teachers, I think that'd be swimming uphill right there.
Well, there you go.
So, upstream, uphill, one of those places.
You know, I mean, it also raises some questions about single-sex education. You know, you wonder – I mean, if this is true, then, of course, any class in a mix – any mixed class, whether it's a male teacher or female teacher, half the kids are going to be not getting the optimal education. So you have to start thinking about whether
How credible did you find Dee's analysis?
Well, look, I mean, you know, this is goes way over my head in terms of the research analysis. I know it wasn't a randomized sample, you know. He was using a bunch of, you know, statistical magic as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, as far as I could tell, it was a good study and a reasonable attempt to try to tease out the impact of gender.
Well, if this holds up, how do you go about getting more male teachers?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I do like the idea of single-sex schools as one potential solution, and then that allows you, of course, to, you know, target.
But you still got to staff those schools.
Well, you still got to staff those schools. How would you do it, Rick?
So, guns and ammo, baby. Guns and ammo.
Guns.
You want more male teachers in Alabama, Kentucky?
Yeah. Guns and ammo?
Winchester 3030, baby.
All right. Well, there we go. See, we offer real solutions here in the podcast. I like that.
That's what I'm saying.
All right. Our final topic, Rick. People are really freaking out over stressed out kids who are taking AP classes, have hours of homework, belong to 5 different clubs, they're captain of their high school curling teams while penning personal statements for Princeton. Jay Matthews had a piece about this in the Washington Post about a week ago based on a new book that's out about a very elite, affluent public school outside Washington. Rick, should we be worried about these upper middle class kids who are killing themselves to get into Harvard?
I mean, first, I got to admit that I think I'm speaking largely out of ignorance. I hardly know any kids who fit this definition. Most of the kids I know were slugs. You got to stick your foot way up their butt to get them off the couch and away from the Xbox and the Cheetos.
Now, Rick, you can't always just be talking about yourself on the show.
But I trust there's these kids out there. And look, as far as I'm concerned, I don't think many kids are wired this way. I think a lot of these kids who are, you know, heavily subscribed in 6 soccer leagues and 11 classes and ballet lessons, look, this is a product of their parents' neuroses and their parents' anxieties.
Mm-hmm. Right.
These are parents who are either nervous that their child's not going to have every possible advantage, or who are trying to live out their own frustrations by making sure their kids' lives come out better than theirs did. And basically what we need to do is we need to ridicule and sanction these parents who are making life so uptight and stressful for these kids. And then we've got to read all the whining stories and all the, you know, I hate my mommy columns that come down the pike in the blobs.
But, you know, Jay's point was very important because this has got to be, what, 1%, 2% of the student population?
That's right.
And, you know, I mean, the vast majority of kids out there are not being pushed in high school. They're not working very hard. They tell us that in polls all the time. And even in the same schools where there might be some kids taking, you know, 6 AP courses, you walk down the hallway and you go into another classroom and you've got the classic scene where the teachers and the students have all agreed, look, you know, students don't bother the teacher. The teacher's not going to make them work
hard. Well, part of it's right. You'd like to think that these kids are raising the bar for the others, but that's not the way it works, right? What actually happens
is
these kids soak up all the time and energy, and everybody else is, let it ride.
Well, very good.
That damn buzzer.
Rick, it is good to have you back in the saddle again.
It's good to be here, babe.
All right. Good, good, good. All right. Well, it is now time for our interview, a very special interview this week with a woman named Virginia. She called into the Fordham offices earlier today, and we asked her to come on the show. Let's take a listen. We're here today with Virginia. Virginia watched our panel on national standards and state standards on C-SPAN last night, She gave a call to the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation today to share some of her comments, and we thought that we'd ask her to share those comments with our podcast listeners. So, Virginia, welcome to the Education Gadfly Show.
Thank you.
So, Virginia, you watched this panel that was, again, replayed on C-SPAN late last night, and you had a few thoughts about the material. We were talking about the problem with state standards and whether national standards and testing might be the solution. Tell us a little bit about some of your ideas for how we can improve the education system and some of your thoughts about national standards and testing.
Okay, well, first I have to go back to when my children were in the public school system. It was very difficult for my children to get by because prayer was taken out of school and the Ten Commandments and the Bible reading. And ever since then, the school has gone downhill. There's no discipline. There's no respect for anyone. Teachers, some of them are there just for pay and not for really teaching the students.
Now tell me, when you left a message earlier, you mentioned that you had some special qualifications for weighing in on some of these ideas. Tell me about that.
I have worked in the school system. I worked at a school that which is right across the street from me. I was a stay-at-home mom. I worked once in a while, but mm-hmm. I always went into the school with my children. I was a lunch aide, which is very important.
You kind of felt a special calling to go ahead and contact us this morning. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. Well, I feel God has been dealing with us in these areas. I used to be in the Family Life Committee in school, in a public school, and I feel that he has given me a message that he wants me to give to you, and I am a prophetess, and he does use me to speak to people in need, and I just feel that you have a need to know what direction to go in, and I feel that he wants me to tell you that and to help you.
So what is that message, do you think, that he has for us?
Well, he wants you to work in that area, but it's going to be very difficult.
So Virginia, do you think God would support national testing then?
Definitely.
Okay. Definitely. Thank you very much, Virginia, joining us today. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Rick, it is now official. It's not just Fordham. God is in favor of national testing. I mean, that's a pretty ringing endorsement, don't you think?
I can't quibble with that. That's straight from the top.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think? Should we put this in our promotional materials?
I just wonder why he took so long to make it clear.
Yeah, that's true. So what do you think God thinks about some of the other hot education issues of the day?
I don't know. I mean, I wonder, it would have been helpful if he'd weighed in back at Nation at Risk. We could have saved ourselves two decades.
I know. Or at least last week when the whole NCES charter school brouhaha,
It makes you wonder, whether it's Page or Bennett or any of the secretaries in between – why didn't they have the right people on staff who could get them, a conduit to the top? Instead, they were mucking about with a bunch of, mid-level
point.
Officials.
It was really, I guess, the outreach office that really should have been doing some of that work. Huh?
You'd like to think. Yeah. Well, where was that liaison?
Yeah, I don't know. All right. Well, if that wasn't weird enough, it is now time for everyone's favorite education news of the weird with our special correspondent, Liam Julian. He's going to have to top that interview. But Liam, why are you staring out the window with binoculars?
I'm checking for illegal border crossers, Mike. Illegal student border crossers, that is. The New York Times recently reported that Greenwich, Connecticut, a town close to New York City with a median family income of $180,000, has hired a private eye to make sure that students attending Greenwich's schools actually live in Greenwich. Word on the street is that some ne'er-do-wells from across the tracks in nearby Port Chester, New York, and Stamford, Connecticut, are sneaking across town lines and enrolling in Greenwich's schools. No doubt these young students are simply seeking a better life and the opportunities that membership in a Greenwich classroom will afford them down the road. Possibly they hope to return home with the knowledge they gained in Greenwich and share it with their younger siblings. But the fact remains, they're breaking the law. Private Eye has not been identified, but he's reportedly a former police officer who now collects $15,000 a year to shadow third graders after school, snoop around motels, and authenticate utility bills. Dr. Charles Wilson, the school superintendent, defends his no-nonsense policy, saying that taxpayers refer to undocumented students as, quote, thieves, and they want insurance that will demand restitution, unquote. But Rick, Isn't it true that many Greenwich fifth graders don't want to sit in these classrooms? And if Greenwich shuts down its borders, won't the seats go unfilled, the knowledge unharvested?
Man, I don't know why these kids want to haul out of Port Chester. We had a good time in Port Chester once, I'll tell you. They're paying this guy $15,000 a year. I mean, that's the real crime here. Shouldn't they be paying this guy top dollar to do this kind of work? I mean, they're spending what? They're probably spending $15,000-$18,000 per kid?
Well, what that tells me is this guy probably just loves the job. He just likes to snoop around, follow
this guy
kids.
Should be getting a bounty for every kid he gets out of there. If he gets 20% of the – right? My goodness.
Here's what I want to know. If Greenwich can keep these kids out of their school system, why can't we figure out who killed JonBenet?
Why can't we keep people out of the country?
Well, Rick, that's a whole other topic.
We should put the Greenwich school card on the school board in charge of the border.
Well, the problem is nobody talks about Washington, D.C. and all the students from Fairfax that are rowing over on the Potomac to get here. But yeah. That's happening
true.
every day.
We should get a head count on that.
It's a true crisis. All right, Liam. Well, not a bad effort, but I have to say
I was outdone by Virginia.
Definitely outdone by Virginia.
Let's just face it.
There's no doubt. In fact, we might contact her about becoming our new News of the Weird correspondent. All right, Liam. Well, we'll give you another chance next week, which is when you will hear from us again. We are back on our regular schedule. But till then, check us out online at www.edexcellence.net. Till next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.